Hey guys, it's Sammy
and Robbie
back again to tell you about another upcoming con.
And we're super excited about this one.
Mm-hmm. It's another Indiana one. This one is PopCon, Indie PopCon to be exact. And it's going to be in Indianapolis, again at the Convention Center.
Indiana Convention Center.
Right in downtown Indianapolis. And Robbie will be there April 26th through the 28th.
Yes. We were just at the Indiana Comic-Con, so if you missed us, you get a chance to meet us again at PopCon.
Yes, well, at least Robbie.
At least me. Ashley will be there.
Oh, yeah, Ashley will be there. That's an exciting thing.
Ashley will be there, so you get to meet a lot of us on the network.
Yeah, two-thirds.
Two-thirds of it, yes.
There you go. Yeah.
So if you're coming to the show, please stop by the Limitless Broadcasting booth. We're always excited to see you.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys at the show.
Bye.
Bye.
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot. Dust. Just a little bit of pixie dust.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Sammy.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Shall we begin?
It's time to get things started on the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, motivational show.
Welcome, Pixie Dusters. We're your favorite hosts. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Ashley. Welcome to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast, produced by Limitless Broadcasting.
Go to limitlessbroadcasting.com after the show and check it out.
Yes.
And the third box this year.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if we're going to do this for 6 months, but
maybe we need to change our intro for the next 6 months to include you.
Yeah, it might just be easier to be like, and Dan.
And this guy.
The guy is back again, you know.
Go to limitlessbroadcasting.com and check us out, okay?
Oh, we might. You just signed your contract with us on that one.
For real, though, yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious. All right. We're in, what, week three of Marvel?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had to do the math. In my head, I was like, how many are left after this?
What comes after two?
Oh, it says week three at the top.
It says week three. I was literally handing it to you.
It's week three per my notes title.
Well,
I'm tired. I'm sorry. I went to bed late, so I'm sleepy.
I feel like we're all moving kind of slow this morning.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very much.
I didn't sleep much either, so.
Yeah.
I didn't go to bed till, oh my gosh, 12:30, 1?
Me too. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, because I went over to my friend's house. She's like, last minute, she's like, you want to come over and hang out? I'm like, yes, I have no social life right now. So
no social life.
I went over. She's very pregnant. She's about 20 weeks pregnant. And so she had a smorgasbord of snacks and we were playing board games. The next thing I know, it's like 11:30 at night. I'm like, I need to go home.
It's bedtime.
But it was some interesting combinations. Like we had egg rolls and vanilla wafers and strawberries and grapes and ice cream. I like described it to Brett. He's like, that's weird. I'm like, I am sitting with a pregnant woman. So
yeah, that's what she wants, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. That. Yeah. But anyways, what are we talking about this week, Sammy? What's on the agenda?
We're doing a lot.
We're doing a lot.
I squished a lot in here.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. Exactly.
Smorgasbord.
It's an appropriate transition because we're talking about recent Marvel TV shows and one-off movies that were just on Disney Plus. So basically, like the Disney Plus only, I guess, side of Marvel. Good look at that. Yeah.
Nice.
And I'm very happy to report before we start this that Ashley has watched at least one of these things. So. Ooh.
I was telling you beforehand, the boy got me Hogwarts Legacy. He brought his Xbox over so I could play it. And literally, I put in way too many hours on that game. But it is fantastic, and we're talking about it during our Hogwarts summer.
I'm sure we will be.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
I have no doubt.
Harry Potter takes priority if Ashley's involved.
Yeah, Harry Potter and normal Disney. Yeah, and Star Wars.
Given.
Marvel's there's a lot on her plates. Not room for Marvel.
Well, I'm starting to get more active in my other podcast, and you know that takes a lot because I'm literally dissecting books. So that takes a lot of research. Yeah, I know I went like 3 weeks without of it.
It takes a lot of effort to sit and record and post.
I did.
It's more effort to research and put the notes together than record.
I did watch your Instagram post, or I guess it was TikTok on Instagram. I don't know, where you talked about like waiting till the last minute to write a 10-page paper or something.
Yes.
And you were like, I haven't done this since like college. Or it's like, oh yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah.
That was, what did I do? I think I put it on Insta too, but yeah,
that's where I saw it.
Yeah.
I don't have TikTok.
No, you do not.
No. Mm-hmm. I'm an old millennial. I don't do that.
We do it probably not well, but we do it.
Let the Gen Z do what they let them have their world. That's my philosophy.
Well, okay. Since we're on this topic, there is a new like filter that they have out. It's like teenage look, yes, and it's supposed to make you look like you were when you were a teenager. I put it on. Well, I did it, and I looked at myself. I'm like, I literally just look airbrushed. I look exactly the same, except airbrushed.
It's weird.
This is not how I looked in high school.
No.
Where's the pimples? Where's the bad complexion? Mm-hmm. Like, this is ridiculous.
It's just airbrushing. That's all it is. It just smooths literally your face out. Yeah.
It doesn't even make you look young. Like, it just makes you look smooth.
Yeah, I agree.
Dum-dums. It does work on some people. Like, the ones who have, like, wrinkles and stuff, it does make them look, like, 20 years younger. Mm-hmm. It made me look maybe a year younger.
Yeah, I don't think it worked very well. I didn't
But we also have very young looking jeans, Sammy. So I know.
It's all that moisturizing and all that, you know.
I don't even moisturize and I still
really
look young.
I'm like very particular about that.
I am not. My skin gets very oily on its own. I don't really need to.
Yeah, but a moisturizer is actually good for you if you have oily skin. I watch way too much YouTube videos.
See, that means a lot of effort in the morning. As you can tell, I don't even do makeup. So that's true.
Yeah, I only do it on the weekends. So,
okay, we're so off topic already. What's the first show we're gonna talk about?
Okay.
Why are you apologizing? That was me.
We always get off topic though. It's just a general apology for the way this will probably go. So, anyways, let's jump into She-Hulk. First show we're gonna talk about.
Woo.
All right. So we got a summary. I think I got off of IMDb. I don't remember. Probably.
More than likely.
Yeah. So our summary is that Jennifer Walters, who's the star of our show, navigates the complicated life of a single 30-something attorney who also happens to be a green 6'7" super-powered Hulk. So there you go. That's your brief summary.
So does she not go back to a normal human like Bruce?
Yeah, she goes back.
She
and
does.
Forth. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she can go to normal human look and then she okay.
Yeah, there's actually
all the posters and stuff make it look like she's a human, a green human, instead of like a Hulk.
Well, that's kind of because that's how She-Hulk looks. She's just tall and like kind of slender, but muscular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's how She-Hulk looks with the long hair.
Yeah. Like it's completely different than Bruce. Like she basically gets full control over it, like from the get go. She doesn't have to.
Okay. You know, gotcha.
Which annoys him.
It does.
Well, of course it does.
Rightfully so. I don't blame him.
I get it. I get it, dude. So the tagline for this show is, you'll like her when she's angry. That's an okay tagline. There's worse ones coming in the, not this week, but next week.
Oh, okay.
We'll get into that. This one was rated TV-14 and was released August 18th, 2022. The ratings were a little lower than I expected. It got a 5.2 out of 10 on IMDb. Critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 80%, but the audience gave it a 33%. And I did not think that was fair for the show, personally.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder why they gave it a 33.
I mean, I have some suspicions, which we'll get into in a second. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
We have Tatiana Maslany as Jennifer Walters, aka She-Hulk. And as we said, she's a lawyer. She works for Goodman, Lieber, Kurtzberg, and Holloway. And they actually specialize in cases involving superhumans. And she gets let go and brought back when she becomes the She-Hulk. And they actually want her to look like the She-Hulk all the time, which is another reason why in a lot of the posters, she looks that way because she's dealing with these superhuman side of the lawyer firm, and they want her to look that way.
Gotcha. Yeah.
There's a lot of complexities that goes with her. Yeah. Anyway.
She's got a lot on her plate.
She does. She really does as a character. Jamil is Mary McFerrin, or what is it? Tatiana. She's a social media influencer who also has superhuman strength, and she's obsessed with the She-Hulk, and they fight.
We're just skipping over the fact that this is Bruce Banner's cousin.
Yeah, we will get into that. You don't know anything about the She-Hulk. I at least knew it was going to be his cousin. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought she was his wife, like in the comics.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No. We'll get into that. You know what? Let me do the rest of the cast and then we can explain to you how she
Well, it was in your thingy-mabobber. So that's why I was like, why are we skipping over this?
I thought everyone knew. I'm sorry. That's not fair. She's his cousin. Yes. I'm
gotcha. So yeah. All right.
They are not dating. No. Or married or anything. No. Next one is Ginger Gonzaga as Nikki. She is a paralegal and Walter's best friend. Mark Ruffalo makes an appearance as Bruce Banner, aka the Hulk, Smart Hulk, because that's basically how he appears in the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tim Roth as Emil Blonsky, the Abomination. Benedict Wong as Wong. And Charlie Cox makes an appearance as Matt Murdock, aka Daredevil.
Love
it was a lot of fun too for this movie.
It's always fun when he shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Ashley, since you literally know nothing about this, in the comic books, they're cousins no matter what, so they're always cousins. Comic books, show, whatever, they're always cousins. In the comic books, she needs a blood transfusion and she gets it from Bruce. But in this, they get into a car accident. So she's cruising along the road with him. They get into a car accident after this big spaceship comes down and scares the crap out of her. They fall off the road. She's bleeding. He's bleeding. He bleeds into her, onto her. She absorbs his blood and instantly becomes the She-Hulk. Like, she runs off in the woods and it's a thing. So that's like the shortened version of what happens.
I feel like a blood transfusion would have made more sense.
I don't know why they didn't do that. I mean, I couldn't tell you why they changed it.
Anywho.
But, I mean, okay, it wasn't super sense. Unbelievable. It just, you know.
It's believable. I don't know why they would have had to change it.
Yeah. It felt like it was one of those they had to do it, just get it out of the way quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, origin story. How do we do it? Okay, car wreck. Gets the blood on her. All right, we're done with that. Now we can get into, like, the actual story.
They didn't want to sit on the origin story.
Probably. Yeah, spend too much time on it. Because there's only the first episode is just really the big setup where she's with Bruce Banner. Right. And he's teaching her and they're hanging out together. And then she's kind of like, all right, I'm done with you. I'm going to go do my own thing. Bye. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's really just the first episode they used to kind of establish all of this before she goes back.
It partially feels like an excuse just to have Bruce Banner in there because it's like he really was kind of useless. Like,
it did. Honestly, I was
it's fun to watch, but.
I really didn't feel like we needed a whole episode with him because I was just like after like 10 minutes, I was like, I feel like she's fine and she should leave. We don't need him anymore. But yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, he's basically just in the first episode and then he's like the last episode. Yeah. And maybe, I can't remember if he shows up periodically in between, but he shows up
briefly, I think, in like episode two.
I was thinking he did. Yeah. Like
one at the very end or something.
Yeah. Like
because he takes off of that ship.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's barely in this, really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he needs to barely be in this because if he was in this whole thing, it would be more of a Hulk movie because Bruce Banner. Yep. And this, like, now is just a lot more popular, would be a lot more popular than this character, She-Hulk, because we don't know She-Hulk yet. We've had a lot with Banner. We have not had anything with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm not mad about that. I think that's fine. All right, we got some fun trivia about her.
Of course.
And She-Hulk. So She-Hulk was created in 1980 by Stan Lee and artist John Buscema. She-Hulk was one of the last characters that Stan Lee created or co-created for Marvel. I did not know that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And although each transformation from Jennifer Walters to She-Hulk and back is created using CGI, obviously, Malia Araya plays She-Hulk on set for reference to the She-Hulk size. And her face is replaced by Tatiana using CGI. So Maslany is 5'4". So that's the actual actress who plays She-Hulk. But her stand-in, Araya, is 6'5 1/4.
Holy
She is giant. There's a behind the scenes on Disney Plus, and I was just like, oh my goodness, this lady is huge.
Wow.
Yeah, so she was the stand-in for reference. They actually talk about how they made two outfits. So they would make an outfit for Tatiana, and then they would make an outfit for Raya, so they could see how it fit when they were doing the CGI mm-hmm. and the changeover and everything. So mm-hmm. they made two of everything in different sizes. So I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to go along with that, as we said, Tatiana is 5'4", not particularly tall. So part of what they did during filming to achieve proper eye lines with her co-stars, she would also stand on large platforms on set, or she would wear a cutout She-Hulk like face on a pole while she was walking around. And it's literally like a giant pole that comes up off the back mm-hmm. of her. And then the face is like up here. So people would look up here while they were talking to her. And then she had like the stickers and stuff all over her for the CGI replacement.
That's
very cool. Interesting how they did
it. Interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's always interesting to see like how they get reactions like, to things that are not there. I'm like, mm-hmm. what method do they use this time?
Yeah, how can we make it so pretty it cool. seems more real? Mm-hmm. 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 And this is Marvel's first full solo Hulk project. Marvel Studios still hasn't purchased the distribution rights to a Hulk film from Universal. So that explains why a Hulk film featuring Mark Ruffalo could not be made. So that's why we haven't had anything.
Darn Universal.
Yep.
I don't know if Disney's attempted to buy it and Universal's like, forget you. I don't really know how that worked, but.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just continued to say no, because haven't they continued to say no about Spider-Man too?
That's why they share Spider-Man. Sony and Disney have to share mm-hmm. the Spider-Man yeah. franchise mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think any of these franchises that own a Marvel character are going to give it up, because they know Marvel or they know Disney's going to pay out to get like at least some sort of rights.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I noticed this too, because like if you go to any of the parks, it still has like the Hulk as the ride, and then the Spider-Man ride is like the old Spider-Man from the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's nothing from the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. It's
very interesting to see the IP wars there.
Yeah. And that's my understanding why we don't have more Marvel here in Florida mm-hmm. is because of this whole battle too with Universal.
Yeah. That's annoying.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Yeah. Corporations, man, what are you gonna do?
For sure.
We don't have Godzilla, we have Universal and Disney.
Yeah. That's honestly true though.
One's Godzilla, the giant one's monsters. King Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And just battle it out constantly.
Which
or Amet and Khonshu, which we'll get to Moon Knight later.
Aha, yes. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
You didn't watch Moon Knight. Moon Knight's the best. I will go on a rampage with Moon Knight.
I don't know if Ashley would like Moon Knight. Well, honestly.
Well, you like Egyptian mythology, right? You like.
She does, but.
I do. Is it Egyptian mythology?
Yes.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll put it on my list.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So back to
my list. She-Hulk's not even anywhere near it.
I like She-Hulk. Anyway, let's just go back into this and then we'll just okay. So in the show, She-Hulk breaks the fourth wall, or she talks directly to the audience. And she's even aware of and acknowledges that she's a character within the MCU. And these are aspects of the character that were a major part of the 1985 graphic novel and continuing comic series entitled The Sensational She-Hulk by writer and artist John Byrne. And I wondered that because I read this, like researched it after I watched the show. And I was just like, why is she always talking to us? And Dan's going to reference something else she does that I agreed with him about the feelings on it when she breaks a fourth wall in a particular
way. Oh my
God,
way.
Yeah. But I was just like, I mean, I didn't mind it because Ashley, you and I in particular have talked about like on the Muppets and stuff, they like to break the fourth wall a lot and we like it when characters do that.
I love it.
Yeah, it didn't bother me, but it makes more sense now that she did this in the comics too, where she mm-hmm. would literally try and like tell the artist to draw her a different way, or she didn't like the way the story was going in the comics. So
mm-hmm.
that was a good way to tie it in. Yeah. And while She-Hulk is Emil Blonsky's Abomination's, wait, what is this sentence? Hold on. This is what happens when you copy and paste.
While She-Hulk, attorney at law, is Emil Blonsky's Abomination Forms live action appearance.
Okay, so Abomination appears in this show. Okay, let me see if I can clean this up. Thank you, IMDb, and this is why I should read when I copy and paste.
It's got Abomination in it.
It does. So Abomination is in this.
Boil it down to that.
He's in this show. Okay, people, he's in this. And his last appearance was in Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, but he was only like a voice form in that, if I remember right. He wasn't like physically in it. Okay, so this is the return of Emile's human form for the first time since the Incredible Hulk movie. Gotcha. That's where we're going.
And for anyone who doesn't know, Abomination is the villain in the Incredible Hulk, because I didn't know that, because I hadn't seen the Incredible Hulk in years.
Yeah, I did not remember.
I was like, wait, who is this guy?
Why are you important? Hold on. Right. Let me Google this. Yeah, so there you go. That's their convoluted way of trying to say that.
Gotcha.
And Dan Slott, who wrote She-Hulk comics in like 2004, also tweeted praise for the series. He called it his favorite Marvel Studios show and the most comic book accurate show in the MCU.
I wonder if that's why the ratings are low.
I think that might be part of it.
Because
potentially
it's close to the comic books.
With the fourth wall breaking and stuff, because if you don't really get it, you don't understand it.
Because the ones who are going to love it are the actual comic book readers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I have other thoughts as to why it's not popular too.
I was going to say, I mean, you think if people were hardcore comic book fans, they'd be more excited about it. Because I really didn't know anything about the comics. So I was like, I was thrown off by a few things. But then I was like, okay, when you said it's like how it was in the comics, I was like, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think it makes it better.
If I were a fan, I'd be like, yeah, this is great. Or if I were, you know, if I followed the comics.
But it's on Disney Plus, so not just comic book readers are going to be watching this. You're going to have teenage girls and boys scrolling through like, oh, let's try it.
Right.
And they hate it because they don't understand the comic books, or they don't have whatever. Like you said, Stephen, there's probably more to it, but I'm wondering if that's just part of it. Because usually when there's a transition from one media to another media, there's going to be hate of some sort in any of the medias that we've had.
That's true.
Anywho.
All right.
I can sense Sammy has many other thoughts.
I have many thoughts.
I can see it bubbling.
I'm going to wait because Ashley hasn't seen it. So I don't think what you're saying is wrong, but I think there is more to it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And
the show has layers.
It has many layers. Yes. Okay. It's last like trivia. And then Dan's going to go on his fun breakdown of this. And then
Ashley got nothing.
I know. That's why I was like, I'm going to put her name, but yeah. So last thing, Jessica Gao grew up a fan of She-Hulk, and after her pitch of Black Widow in 2021 was called out as a backdoor pilot for the character, she told Marvel to call her if they ever wanted something with Shulky, which is another name for She-Hulk, because I Googled this and I was like, is this a mistype? What is this? But She-Hulk, Shulky, same thing. Just another nickname for her. But yeah, Jessica talks about in the making of She-Hulk how she did go and she pitched on Black Widow, but she had included She-Hulk in it. And they were just like, this is not where we want to go with this. It's not appropriate. And she's just like, well, let me know. I'm a big fan. And they did bring her back. So I thought that was very cool.
Wait, was She-Hulk in Black Widow?
No.
Okay.
She wanted her to be.
Gotcha. I was like, wait.
She was not. Yeah. This is her introduction to us. Gotcha. Yes. This is her first appearance. Okay, that's so cool. Dan, you go ahead, and then I will share all of my...
All righty. So yeah, you already kind of touched on it. Like, in the beginning, like, the whole, you know, comedic, plucky, breaking the fourth wall was, like, a little, like, kind of threw me off in the beginning. So I was like, I sort of thought, okay, are we doing, like, a more PG version of Deadpool? Like, is this kind of, you know, like, what is that? And then I found out later, like you said, that's always who the character has been. So I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I totally buy it. And it really, after a while, it really kind of grew on me. Like it's, and I've said this, I'm kind of skipping points, but what's great about this one is that it's, and I've said this about other shows involving Marvel, is that a lot of these shows are going to a much more stripped down version, or like a much more intimate story. There's no epic world ending battle. It's just one person trying to figure themselves out, you know? And I realized that about halfway through when they were at the lawsuit, when what's her name? The makeup artist was trying to sue her for the, I was like, okay, where's the bad guy? When's the bad guy show up? When's the big fight? And it kind of resonated like, it's not about that. It's just her journey.
It's just about her. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So it's like, yeah, very, very cool. Very well done.
And Ashley, to go with what he's saying, they wrote an epic battle scene at the end. And she was like, what is this? And then she leaves.
Right.
Go complain about it to the writers.
Mm-hmm. Seriously?
Yeah. And she's just like, why are we doing this? And so it does not come to be at the end.
Yeah. And evidently she did a lot of that in the comics too. Like she would, you know, I was like, somebody would say like she would have to fight like a bunch of like frog monsters or something. And then she would actually look at the what is it called?
The page.
Yeah. And call out the writer by name, like, really, was it John or whatever? And it's like, really, John, or whatever his name was? Mm-hmm. You're really going to make me write frogs? No, fix this. Like, you do a lot of that kind of stuff.
So funny.
So,
I love it.
So now the thing that I was going to mention before about how she breaks the fourth wall in this particular episode, the very last episode.
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming because I had kind of seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
It still made me feel very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like the way she breaks the fourth wall is that she looks at the camera, she says something, and then it goes immediately to the Disney Plus menu, like with the boom, as if I had just pressed menu.
Yeah, like you backed out of it.
Like you backed out of it and it just stopped. And so like you instinctively, you find yourself reaching for your remote, like, wait, did I press something on accident? And then the little slot where you click on She-Hulk pops out, and then out comes Jen as She-Hulk crawling out of it like the girl from The Ring.
Yeah.
And then she hops from one thing to another. She hops into like a behind the scenes, like documentary or docu-series.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I'm just sitting there watching. I'm like, I don't like this. This is uncomfortable for me.
No,
like, I don't like things coming out of my screen.
No,
I didn't think I'd be that uncomfortable, but it was very uncomfortable for me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, and it's not even meant to be scary, but
not, but it was very weird.
Yeah, it was.
I'm glad I'm not alone in that.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Yeah. But
goodness.
Yeah, but aside from that, it's a really funny episode because she jumps from the series to the behind the scenes series where she actually literally goes into the writer room and just chews them out for how bad it's written.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, "No, you guys got to fix this."
Yep.
So
yeah, and she goes to find.
I might have to put this on my list.
She goes to find Kevin. So you're thinking Kevin Feige is going to be in this?
Yeah,
he's not.
He can't find him.
No, Kevin is a like robot AI machine.
Yeah,
that controls Marvel. And there was a whole joke where
Kevin's not real.
Kevin Feige always wears a hat, like a Marvel hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they wanted to design a robot with a hat. And he was like, that's stupid. The robot wouldn't wear a hat. So instead, they just designed it as part of the unit. So the thing still has like a hat looking visor. Yeah. And
And Kevin is like an interface, an acronym for like knowledge interface, video, something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, but it's an acronym, not even like a name.
So Kevin's not real. Got it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Kevin is a controlled AI robot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It follows an algorithm of story arcs.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
No wonder we have so many Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So I touched on the hero villain thing. As soon as I saw when she goes to see the Luke Jacobs Davidson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he goes up to the thing that he's preparing for another one of his clients, and it turns out to be the Daredevil mask. I was like, that Murdoch's gonna show up. Oh my god,
yep.
It's gonna be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, he shows up. And I love when he shows up as a lawyer because he's just so much cooler as a lawyer. I mean, he's cool as Daredevil.
Yeah.
But when he just like
I agree.
Yeah, he just cruises into the courtroom, just fully just cool with himself and just owns everybody in the room. I'm like, that's my dude.
That's my dude. Yeah, his intro was great. I loved it.
So good. So good. And this is what really stood out to me when I saw them actually meet, is that he's probably the only real other superhero that can actually relate to her, like on the same level that she's on. Like, as much as we love Bruce and his attempt to try to understand her, you know, from the Hulk point of view, it's very different for Bruce, you know, because we talked about it earlier. He's never had to, you know, it wasn't easy for him, you know, it was all easy for her. But more than that, it's never had to be a situation where Bruce Banner and the Hulk have to be integrated into the public eye. It's really only the Hulk.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I mean, Bruce became a public figure out of necessity because he was part of the Avengers. But as a person, he's reclusive. He, you know, he's a scientist. He stays in the background. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have a relationship, or he doesn't have a family, or doesn't see his family. Whereas Jen, it's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, both of her personalities are very much in the public eye. So the only other person who could really understand that would be Matt Murdock, even though Daredevil isn't really, like, nobody knows that he's Daredevil, but it's still very much like a public persona of having to integrate both into, you know, his life. So, and that's what's so interesting and different about Jen, is that she doesn't want to be a superhero. She just wants to be a person.
Yep.
So, and that's really the whole premise of the show, is it explores how can she do that? You know, how can a person
exactly.
Do that? So yeah, it's good to see Matt there, and I think he's, you know, think they're very good for each other.
Yeah, I agree. So,
what else? Oh yes, I added this point today. Wong is the Mr. Rogers of the MCU.
I love him so much.
And no one can tell me differently.
He just pop up everywhere now.
Apparently, he should. I want him in everything. I love Wong.
He's comfort food like in the form of a character.
I feel like I see his name in like all these different show notes now. I'm like, where is he coming from?
Well, and I liked in this too, because it was not as serious. Like, he had this whole thing in Doctor Strange, and it was pretty freaking intense. And this was not. So it was nice.
Yeah. Well, we see a different side of him. I mean, he just wants to chill out and binge watch his new shows.
Yeah, and he befriends this like party girl. But he's watching like The Sopranos, This Is Us. I can't remember if there was another one. The Sopranos in particular was super funny.
And she just becomes his like TV watching buddy.
Yeah, they're just drinking and hanging out and watching TV.
It's adorable.
Oh gosh.
And she calls them Wongers.
Wongers, yeah.
Wongers.
It's so funny. Oh my God.
It's cute.
I loved it.
Yeah. But all in all, it was you know, it was a very well done show, and you know, I thought it was really, you know, good, and good stuff. It was different. It was a little more fun, a little more lighthearted.
Yeah.
But you see things from a very different perspective as opposed to what we've been used to. So I think that's good.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna start with one of your last points about how she doesn't really want to be a superhero. It's just, this is what it is now. She got stuck with this. She didn't choose it. It just happened to her. But I mean, you know, you can say the same about Bruce, obviously, but for her, the struggles that she goes through, the difference in the show is, number one, she's showing her struggles with not wanting to be a superhero and dealing with the integration, just like Dan said so well. Number two, I think part of the problem why it did not appeal is, let's be honest, Marvel is probably heavily geared towards the guys, the men.
Let's just talk about the elephant in the room.
Like, you know, that's
we're just, all thinking it. We're all.
It is what it is. Yeah, there. I mean, we can enjoy it too. And Ashley, you, me, and Alex, we had like a whole conversation about how we don't need things to be feminine for us to enjoy it.
Yeah,
which I still believe stands. But this is more geared towards women. It's all written by women. That's all that's in the writer's room. It's filmed, produced. It's women. It's heavily female based. But I don't think it's overly feminism, you know, like pushing that in your face or too like geared that way. But I do think that is part of the problem, because she talks about like, she wants to go on dates, right? She's single. She wants to meet somebody. The guys are not interested in her unless she's a She-Hulk. So she makes a She-Hulk dating profile because she's beautiful and she's big and strong. I don't think she's not beautiful as regular old Jen. I think she's still beautiful, but she's shorter. She's got curly hair. It's a different persona. And she really struggles with that. And there's this whole thing with Abomination, and he's like a therapy group.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's
for other like people struggling with their identities and their supernatural issues. It's very cute, that whole setup, but she gets stuck there. She doesn't really want to be in the therapy group, and she's kind of mad about it, but eventually she joins, and she has this really great speech where she talks about, you know, like, how she is struggling, like, you know, now everybody wants me to be the She-Hulk, but I'm losing my identity. Like, I'm two different people stuck in one. And while I have appreciation for both, it's hard when now people don't want to see me as a person as I was before, you know, like like, it's really hard for her dealing with the two identities. Like you were saying, like, she loves the attention. She loves it that, you know, she embraces the She-Hulk, but at the same time, she's just like, I don't want to just be the She-Hulk, you know, I'm another person outside of that.
Yeah.
And I think that was just, it was such a great speech that she did. And it just showed how much sadness she had. But I do think that is part of the problem, is that we're dealing with a lot of emotions in this one, you know, rightly so. And she's a woman and she's dating, she's sleeping with men, multiple men. And I think that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that character, but you know, there's always that certain stigma of when guys do it, it's okay. When women do it, it's not. And yep. I do think that may have come in a little bit, where I don't think it was played any sort of way in the show, but I do think that probably was part of the the ratings. And it really was just showing her life. It wasn't meant to be, I'm going out as a She-Hulk and I'm beating up everybody. While there were some fight scenes, it's mostly, yeah, like you said, it was just, it's funny, it's fun, it's lighthearted. It's talking about her struggles, her life. It's a look into Jen's dealings with this new persona she has to put on. That's really the focus of the show. And I do think that that's probably why some people rate it a little lower, in my opinion.
Yeah. I wondered, like, when you said you had other things that you thought of, and as you guys were describing the show, I'm like, this does not sound like a superhero Marvel show that we have come to. I mean, honestly, anybody who loves Marvel has come to expect that it's going to be a superhero show where there's going to be an epic battle, or there's going to be a nemesis, or anything. And if that didn't offer that in this show, yeah, I can see the ratings being extremely low, because as you guys were describing it, I'm like, this sounds like a young adult, college age, teen, contemporary novel, except just she's a She-Hulk.
Right.
Like, it doesn't in a lot of ways, an adventure. It's just like a regular fiction book.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this 30-something-year-old woman who's just trying to figure out her life, essentially. Yeah.
And she references that too. She says, you know, my epic battle is my life. My dark night of the soul is I'm just getting screwed over.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, deal with this. You know what, the other, as you say that, so I really believe that a lot of people who walk into Marvel, who walk into Star Wars, who walk into all these different things, me included, we don't want something that is showing us what we're dealing with in real life. We want to be transported elsewhere and not deal with what we're struggling with. And She-Hulk, if I would have watched She-Hulk, what, 2 years ago, I probably would have threw it at the wall, metaphorically, because that was literally what I was going through 2 years ago as a 30-something single who was still trying to figure out herself as she moves around. So we don't want those. We don't want to be brought into our own reality during this time in our lives because of everything that's going on in the world. I think that's a big problem with, or why we don't see as many kind of realistic shows and movies anymore, is because we've gone so much crap the past 3-4 years with COVID and all the stuff that's happening overseas, etc., politics and all the things, that we just want fantasy and adventure. And I think that's why Marvel and Star Wars and the other things outside of the Disney universe that are fantasy are just exploding, because it literally takes us out of our reality.
That's true.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, escapism can be very healing in you know, times of crisis, and you know, times of heavy things going on in the world. I know, I think Emma Watson referenced this during one of the Harry Potter behind the scenes. It's like, you have a safe place to go where you can feel safe and feel loved and you know, so yeah, it's I can definitely see, like, it's kind of getting away from that and being reminded of where you actually are is definitely off-putting.
But I do think it's good to have the conversation too, even though I agree with what you said 100%. And I'm happy that maybe that we are starting to add things in like this, where she's talking about, you know, mental health is a big deal right now, which is essentially what you're alluding to, right? And what you're saying. So, and the fact that she addresses it, like, I'm unhappy. Like, you would think I wouldn't be. I've got everything, right? The She-Hulk, I work at a great firm, you know, but I'm still unhappy and it's hard. And sometimes, like, I like stuff like that, Maybe I just like to be depressed. I don't know. But, you know, I do enjoy watching shows where I can relate to it in that way and be like, you know what, you're struggling too, I'm struggling too, and this makes me feel like I'm not alone. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's good and bad most definitely to this kind of stuff. And it's, I think it, either way, it's great that Marvel is branching out mm-hmm. and we're not getting the same thing over and over again, for sure.
Yeah.
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 Maybe that's why people are giving, maybe that's why people are getting so Marveled out, is because they've literally been giving us the same thing over and over and over again. Like, we mm-hmm. got all the way up to Endgame and then we're like, oh, okay, it's done. Mm-hmm. The epic now journey has ended. Mm-hmm. Well, now what should have been moving on to something else, not continuing
right.
to do the same thing over and over again in smaller formats. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like She-Hulk is like this experiment to try to get away from what they've been doing. And mm-hmm. it sounds like it failed in a sense.
But it really did have a lot of views. So I don't know if Disney viewed it as a failure, and she's going to be brought into future projects. So,
mm-hmm. okay, good. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping they try to do more of it. Mm-hmm. Ms. Marvel to try to help with a little bit of transition. Yeah. I feel had kind of half and half of what you're talking about. Like, as yes. you're talking about She-Hulk, I'm like, okay, that was pretty much Ms. Marvel until about episode 5.
And then Ms. Marvel yeah. started a lot of action adventure.
Which makes sense because it's a teen show. So it kind of mm-hmm. has to have, you have to.
Yeah.
When you got a superhero, you got to have some sort of, mm-hmm. when she actually wants to be a superhero, you have There's to have some difference. Sort of
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ms. Okay. Marvel. Yeah. Let's dive into Ms. Marvel then to keep this moving along.
Go for it.
Because I think we kind of got through She-Hulk.
We did.
All right. So Ms. Marvel, the summary for this one is Kamala, a 16-year-old superhero fan with an imagination, particularly when it comes to Captain Marvel, feels like she doesn't fit in at school and sometimes even at home. That is until she gets superpowers like the heroes she admires. Yeah. So I think that was a good summary. Thank you.
It was.
This one is TVPG, released June 8th, 2022. It had 6 episodes. This one got a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 98% from critics, according to Rotten Tomatoes, and 80% from the audience. So
nice.
A little bit higher.
I completely agree.
And again, probably if it got any lower ratings, again, I think we're looking at the male 30-something who just didn't understand the show or didn't try to.
Well, they probably didn't even try to watch it.
Yeah, that's my not to put every male 30-something in a box. I don't want to do that.
No, I'm with you. We dudes can kind of be.
Yeah, there pig-headed. Are some bros out there who just need to chill out. Okay. Not everything needs to be made.
I can be pig-headed about some stuff sometimes. So
well, all I'm of us.
Guilty just as much of this stuff.
We definitely.
We all are pig-headed about things.
Yeah. Just we give us like the right topic.
You know.
Yeah. Give us the right topic and we're yeah, just like.
Let's, I can we all pull like one our out realities right
the way we want them.
Huh? Ashley.
Oh, no.
What is Hollywood Studios called?
It is MGM.
What is Disney Springs called?
It is Downtown Disney.
I mean, those are smaller.
They changed
but
that? I didn't even know that.
Friends.
It's years, Disney years, Springs years now. Ago. It's so dumb.
Wow, I never knew that.
Like 5 years, 6, 7.
I don't go to Disney, while. So, you know.
I got to ask. Was the last time you were at Disney in spring when you guys came to visit me, Becca, and Holly at Disney that summer or that spring break?
I went a year later. That was my last time. So 2010 was my last time in Disney. Yeah, it's been a while.
It's changed a bit.
Dan, I'm so sad for you.
Don't be sad for me. I mean, I enjoy Disney, but you know, it's not a regular part of my visiting regimen.
To Star Wars Land. I don't care about other stuff for you. I know that's not going to appeal to you, but Star Wars Land.
Yeah, I am going to have to get there at some point.
I need to keep
forgetting about it, honestly. It's just, I don't know. I mean, ever since I was 8, I mean, that was my last time where Disney was like, oh, for me, you know. Oh, I'm a Universal guy. What can I say?
So sad. It's okay. Boy hasn't been to Disney, like a park yet, so this will be his mm-hmm. first experience.
Oh, he's never been?
Never.
Oh,
he's
okay.
like walked into Downtown Disney when it was Downtown Disney. Gotcha. He has never been to a park. So we are going to MGM,
okay.
specifically Star Wars Land, to mm-hmm. help with the first transition. Because he has no choice. If he's going to be with me the rest of his life, it's just going to happen. He's going to go to Disney.
Yeah.
We'll start in the place that he's familiar with, you know, the Star Wars. Yeah, I'm assuming he's, you said he's a Star Wars guy, right?
He's a Star Wars guy. Okay. He is an original three Star Wars. He's seen all the others, but he's like, he knows the good.
They're all good. What are we talking about?
Okay.
They all got their moments.
Yeah, they all got their moments. We're doing lightsaber. We're doing the lightsaber workshop, and we're doing the droid depot. So, nice. Yeah.
When can you book that?
In 20 days, because I just checked.
I knew you would know. That's why I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well, I got the ticket. So our tickets for Universal and for Disney are booked. Pretty much everything that I needed to buy ahead of time is booked. And then I just got to make reservations in like 20 days and then we're good to go.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I'm super excited. But we got off topic. So, cast of Ms. Marvel.
All right. So, back to this. Iman Vellani is Kamala Khan, aka Ms. Marvel.
And she's amazing.
I know.
I love her.
As we said, she's a 16-year-old Pakistani-American high school student from Jersey City. She's an aspiring artist, avid gamer, and she writes superhero fan fiction about heroes like Carol Danvers, aka Captain Marvel. She gains the ability to harness cosmic energy and create a hard light constructs from a magical bangle. Fun.
Cool.
Matt Lintz is Bruno. That's Kamala's best friend and a tech genius who has a crush on her. What are you doing?
We don't talk about Bruno.
Oh.
I'm sorry. The first time she said his name in the show, I'm like, Bruno. We don't talk about Bruno. What are you doing here?
Oh, my God. Okay, so Yasmin Fletcher is Nakia. That's Kamala's close friend. Zenobia Shroff is Muniba. That's Kamala's mother. Mohan Kapoor is Yusuf. That is Kamala's father. Sagar Sheikh is Amir, and that's her older brother. And we have Rish Shah as Kamran. That is a boy that Kamala has a crush on. Big crush. Yes. And Nira Buka is Kamran's mother, who's also the leader of the clandestines, who are a big freaking deal in this TV show. Yeah. They're, I don't know. I feel like they're made to be bad, but it's a struggle. I don't know.
Yeah.
I put that on all of them, the thoughts, opinions. Did you bother to watch this? Did you not notice that? I put that for literally, I copied and pasted every one of these. I put just in the show notes, friends, because obviously you can't see them. At the end of trivia, I would put thoughts, opinions. Did you bother to watch this? And then I would start with Ashley because I always assumed she probably didn't, although I was 50-50 on this one because I did highly recommend it. But I was then we'll put Dan next because he'll probably actually have something to say about at least half of these.
Wow.
Yeah, I got two of them, so that's something.
I am offended.
I did sense the passive aggressive hinting at the did you bother to watch this?
That was aimed at Ashley solely.
Okay. Oh, I know.
Yeah, it really was. Although I didn't watch Miss Marvel.
How many times have I told you that I'm just not interested in the Marvel anymore?
Well, once you got the Hogwarts show, their game two, I was now she's not going to watch any of this.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I immediately was that goes.
You can blame Boy.
Boy!
Okay, I'll send him a message and be like, what is wrong with you? You're ruining my podcast. okay, let's do the trivia real quick. And then Ashley can talk about the show she watched. So there we go. So Kamala debuted in Marvel Comics not that long ago in 2013 as Miss Marvel. So she's a newer Marvel character.
Mm-hmm. I thought she was fairly new.
Yeah.
This was post-Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Huh. Yep. Iman Vellani became a fan of Kamala Khan, aka Miss Marvel, when she read the 19-issue run of Miss Marvel Mecca, mirroring Kamala's fangirl tendencies. She dressed up as Miss Marvel for Halloween when she was 15. And I thought that was a fun little tie. And I was like, oh, she's already a fan. Okay. And Miss Marvel is Marvel's first live action Muslim hero. Yeah. Branching out a little bit again, Marvel. Good job. Mm-hmm. Getting the diversity out there. Yeah. And when Bruno tells Kamala that there is a mutation in her DNA, you can hear the X-Men, the animated series theme song playing.
Nice.
You can. I heard it as soon as they said the mutation. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
X-Men. It's coming. They're coming.
It's coming.
And this is not trivia, but when I was watching it, it literally opens with a Weeknd song playing. And I was like, I feel like I'm going to like this show just because of the way it opened. Like, it was such a good intro to her character with her sitting there, the Weeknd's playing. And I'm like, all right, I think I can vibe with this girl. So it was, that was just more like a fun little thing that I was like, okay, I
like this. Is it sad I had no clue that was a Weeknd song?
No, I guess.
Okay, good.
You're forgiven for that.
Well, I just... It's music, mainstream. Yeah. Okay.
It's not all bad.
No, I just I like haven't sat down and listened to it anymore because I don't like listening to the commercials on the radio anymore because I have Spotify. Mm-hmm. So I just pick a playlist of my own that's already been made.
Well, and radio is 95% commercials anyway, so
this is true. Yeah. And the play, because the playlist, they, when my playlist ends, it picks other songs that aren't on the playlist that would go along with it. And the Weeknd and some of those types of like music genres is not on my playlist.
Yeah, it's okay.
But modern music is what I've like seen referenced on TikTok posts. Like that's how I've learned about most music.
That's fair.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Inaccurate. Yeah,
you're not wrong. Mm-hmm. So Sammy is right. This is the only show on this list for this episode that I have watched.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely adorable. I need a second season like now. I want to turn on my TV and have a second season because it was so cute. It was very much the Disney Channel vibes. And I think it's what I needed amongst the Marvel Kingdom for me to actually like something again. Just because it just, I don't know. It pulled me in to the YA world. It felt very YA. Yes. If you don't know what that means, people, it means young adult. And that's like my niche when it comes to books and different in my writing and different things. So it was great. I thought Kamala is such a sweet girl. Yeah. And she looks like a normal teenage girl. And let me reference this. I'm not talking about race because I love that they brought in like, I love that they brought in diversity. I think it worked great with the story. But what I mean by normal teenage girl is she is not like, what can I reference? She's not like
Sweet Valley High, like non like 90s.
Yeah, well, that's where I was going. I was going like, she's all that. The movie, she's all that from back in the day. She's wearing the glass, like she's not like one of those girls who's very hot, just wearing glasses and bad clothes. And then they blossom her into this beautiful beauty queen when they get the confidence. That's not what this is. She literally looks like an everyday girl. She has curves. She's not like the stick figure tall girl. She's medium height. Like it, I feel like this was a great representation of just middle school, high school girls in the show. And I don't know how old she is when she started, when she filmed this, but she looks like she's high school age. Like she her face, very baby face. It just, it was great. I absolutely adore how they portrayed Kamala in this show. And Amin, is it Amin? Is that what her name was? Sorry, I forgot already. Yeah, Amin did an absolute fantastic job of it. Let's see here. I said something else. Oh, in the show for Kamala, she is, she like, what did I say? Kamala is beautiful in who, she's beautiful in who she is. And she doesn't lose that during the show. Like she doesn't have to change. She doesn't think she needs to change or be something different. She incorporates who she is into the superpowers when she gets that. So loved it. Now, this was a typical love triangle because this is a YA show. Let's be honest. It's YA and they shove in a triangle. This is literally my least favorite trope. I hate the love triangle trope. It's ridiculous. I literally just did a rant about this on my podcast that came out on the 24th about this. Because you have Bruno, who's like the typical best friend who's in love with her. You always have a typical best friend who's in love with the main character. And then you got the hot new guy. It's literally this. It's
literally what it was. Yes.
Now he does show interest in her, which is not always the case. But honestly, I'm not a fan of either of these boys. I think Bruno needs more confidence. I don't like him for her. And Cameron just seems like a bad guy in the making. Like, I don't know where he goes from here. I don't know the comics, but he just seems like a bad guy. And we don't need the villains to lovers trope going on either.
Yeah.
So I suggest the Red Arrow guy as her only love interest.
I can get behind like that. Him. Yeah, he helps her out briefly in the show. Yes. And I was literally like, is this the guy she's going to, if she
this
ends up with somebody?
To be the guy.
I really thought maybe they would pull a like bait and switch. And then I was like, oh, no, we're just doing the Bruno Cameron like thing. And to go with what you're saying, just real quick, why does Bruno have to be in love with her? Why can't they just be best friends? Why?
I don't know.
Why? It just annoys me so much.
Because there's no
just
angst that way.
Oh my God, just
we
let that be
more
friends.
Angst. Because there's not enough angst in the world. Everyone needs to be angsty.
Because what? They almost kissed.
That is sarcasm.
She has to deal with these powers. That's her angst, okay?
Exactly.
Yes, but she okay, so what really, really annoyed me is that they almost kissed twice. Her and Bruno, and then her and Cameron almost kissed twice.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, girly girl, what are you doing?
Just stop.
But anyways, so next season, Red Arrow guy as her main love interest.
I can get
Cameron,
behind that.
Cameron is probably going to go bad guy. Bruce just needs to stay in California, and her best friend needs to be, what's her name? Yasmin.
Yeah.
Yasmin needs to be the main best friend. She was fun. I needed more of her.
Yeah, she should have been more prominently showcased.
Yeah, because like she was even like for her, I love her character in the fact that she isn't just standing up for herself as a woman. She's standing up for herself as a Muslim woman who's like this thing that only men have been able to do. Sorry, Dan, she's running for the board, like the temple board.
Yes.
Their Muslim temple board.
Which, you know, is all men.
An all man thing.
Gotcha.
And she runs for it and she actually gets it, which is amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a lot of like behind the scene, like the, not behind the scenes, but the side stories, I guess is what you call them, that are very empowering and I love it.
Yeah, I did enjoy her story too.
So Kamala's grandmother,
oh my gosh,
she was hilarious.
She was very funny.
She's like, in true grandma style, she FaceTimes her granddaughter and puts the phone up here, and all you see is her eye.
And poor Kamala is just like, can you move the phone away from your face?
But the whole premise of the show of how she gets her powers and how her grandma kind of brings her in on that is just really cool to see, like, the history of it. Because you really don't understand why she's getting her powers until, like, episode, what was it, 5?
We were pretty far into the series before you kind of understand what's happening.
Yeah. But, yeah, I have too many thoughts and I'm trying to keep them organized so I don't mess everyone up. The development between Kamala and her mother is great. You have the whole like rebellious teenage mom, very protective, holding on tight, and Kamala wants to, you know, go free. That's a normal thing. Now, I do think they rush the development between her mom and Kamala because there's like a shift. Like she's very protective and doesn't trust Kamala. And then after episode 5, when they go to Pakistan to, her grandma like says, you need to come here, you need to understand what this bangle does, because her grandmother knew about it. There's a huge shift and it's very, very quick. It's like, and now her mom is supportive and says, go do what you need to do and be free, child. It was very quick.
It's like as soon as they figure out she has the powers and all that, her mom's just like, oh, okay, cool. And I'm like, wouldn't you be worse now about letting her go do stuff?
Yeah, I need that. I really wanted to see that fleshed out a little bit more. I also wanted to see when they were in Pakistan fleshed out a little bit more. I feel like that was very quick, but I know it's like 6 episodes, so they have to like
cram it in,
keep it rolling. I thought it was great how they actually showed the struggle to get used to her powers. I feel like in other superhero movies, I feel like after they do like one montage, they're like an expert of their powers, and she did not actually get a hold of her powers until 10 minutes before the end of episode 6.
Very, very end.
So you see the struggle, and I feel like it was more realistic. Because I think finally everybody came together at the end of like she realized all the things. So in this show, Dan, do you know any? I feel like do you know the premise of the show at all?
I do not.
Okay.
So I'm kind of, this is my introduction to it. So.
Okay.
Lost. Sorry. I'm not the good person to introduce this to you.
Yeah. No, I'm not lost. I'm following it pretty well. I'm just like.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're explaining things as you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So she gets her powers because she puts on the spangle. that her grandmother sends her on purpose, which I found hilarious. And what it is her grandmother sent her this bangle, and the bangle was Kamala's great grandmother's bangle. And it starts the powers, or awakens the powers in her. You learn right. that she actually has a mutation inside of her that this bangle kind of opens it up to her. But when she starts showing her powers, there's a department that ends up being the real villains of the show. A department that is going after her because she's an enhanced person. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the department's called, but it was ridiculous. Like, I don't like how they put it together. The name is weird. They don't really have a normal plan.
I'm wondering if that's a non-brand version of Weapon X, because they don't actually, or maybe they do, I don't know now. I know the term enhanced was what they substituted for mutant, because they didn't yes. use mutant back in the day. Uh-huh. So the institute that like goes after mutants so they can turn them into weapons is called Weapon X. But I don't know if that's what that's called in the MCU. So that may be like
I think they changed. Did no. they change the? I think they changed the name, but I think that's almost what it is, though. Right.
But I mean, it's like the same institute, just under a different name, because they can't use the name. Like, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's kind of like the government going after like the superheroes when they like entrapped them so that they couldn't use their powers in the world. You know how there was like movie, like they put them in a underwater prison.
Big prison thing.
Yeah. Kind of like that sort of deal. So as I'm like, oh, so my I have so many questions about it. I'm like, okay, I didn't know about that department you talked about. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. so is it mm-hmm. a splinter of that? Is it a splinter of SHIELD after SHIELD was disbanded because of what's his face? Is it a part of SWORD, which is the new kind of department that's watching over all of this? Like, what? We don't know who the heck they are. They just kind of bounce in and out, and they actually end up being the villains because they're trying to take away Kamala and then inadvertently Cameron, because he gets powers randomly. I need that. So
it sounds like a version of Weapon X.
Yeah, I think they're going after specifically like the mutants. I think that is their main goal. I don't think they would mess with the Hulk or anything like that. I think they're literally the mutants.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. So the other part of the story is the reason the bangle is so important. So this kind of brings in a little bit of multiverse into the show. There's these characters called the Clandestines. They also call themselves Djinns, which is, I don't remember what a djinn is. I think it's like an evil genie or something. But they were exiled from their verse, from their realm that's in a different pocket. And this bangle was supposed to help them get back there. Well, Kamala's great-grandmother realized that it was actually very dangerous. It was going to destroy the world sort of deal. So she hid it from the rest of her clan. Because her great-grandmother was a djinn, so that means Kamala is a djinn. The people that she hid it from are trying to get Kamala. So you got the department going after Kamala, and you got the djinns going after Kamala to try to get this band, so that way they can get back to their world. So they actually do open up the veil on accident. I don't even, like, she smacks it with something, and she goes back in time, and there's this whole thing. But the veil's open, and the woman who killed her great grandmother, because they like age very, very slowly from where they're from, like sacrificed herself to close the veil. But when she sacrificed herself to close the veil, she said her son's name, which is Cameron. And then this magical power somehow got inside of him. Now he can do the same thing as her. And it's just very, very confusing. I need more episodes.
Welcome to Marvel.
I need more episodes.
This seems like a very you type of story.
It is.
I told you.
I need another season. But yeah, they do. There's just a lot of fun things in this show. She does a cool time travel where she gets to actually see what happened to her great grandmother. Because for a while, you have no clue what happened to her. And then you find out she got killed. And yeah, but I say this at the end. I need a second season. I don't need her in X-Men things. I don't want her to be a part of an X-Men show. I just
will not be her. She will be back in a movie very soon. I don't know about a season two, but she will be in a project.
I know about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know about the movie, which I'm excited for, but I just need her. I don't, I'm excited for the movie, but I need another season of her.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop ranting.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the plans are.
Because we have a whole other show still we have to
go
through. I know.
We got a couple things to go through. I don't know. Because it seems some of these TV show things that Marvel is doing are one-offs. Like WandaVision, well, that was it. There's not supposed to be any more WandaVision. I've heard potentially for She-Hulk, maybe season two, maybe not. So you can't guarantee anything in the Marvel universe, whether you will get more or not. They like to do a lot of one-off miniseries.
Loki's getting a season two. Why can't anybody else
understand
get a season two?
I understand that, but some of these shows, they go into it and they're like, this is it. We're just going to introduce the character and then we're going to do other things with them. And that is that.
A lot of them end in a way that's more or less like it completes the main, like it leaves stuff open, but it completes like the main story in a way that's satisfying enough to where it's like, okay, yeah, I can, like Moon Knight is kind of like that. We'll get to Moon Knight, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, we're
like,
about
it
to
leaves
get into
it
that.
Open, but it ends very satisfyingly. So like if they never did another Moon Knight, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I doubt that. Well, but you never know.
There was a post on December 25th of 2022. Marvel Studios' original plan for MCU's Ms. Marvel includes multiple Disney Plus seasons.
Okay, so they do plan to do more for her.
So
there you go. So she's one who's going to get multiple seasons.
I'm happy.
Yeah. So I don't have a lot to add because you kind of covered a lot of it, you know, as I expected you would when I realized you watch this show. But one thing we didn't talk about that I thought was a lot of fun at the beginning of this was AvengerCon and how there's literally like a Comic-Con for Avengers that she goes to and is a big deal for her. And I'm like, how meta is that? Because we go to these Comic Cons dressed as these characters too, and then this world they have a whole Avengers Con just for it. I just thought that was a lot of fun, and that's where she first starts to get her powers, and it's a whole thing there. But that was one of the really fun things I enjoyed about this show too. It was just, I'm like, yeah, that's how it is when you go to these nerdy conventions.
In a weird way, they sort of including the audience in on the story.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, hey, you guys are part of this too, because it is. I mean, it is part of that Marvel world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's Kamala, because she is a fan of the Avengers, and then she becomes her own superhero, which we will not be able to do, but she's one of the lucky ones. So that was a lot of
science is doing some crazy things now. You never know.
Yeah, it's true. You never know. Yeah. Could be.
I forgot to mention at the end, her dad explains what her name means, and her name actually means Marvel.
Oh yeah.
And it was a cute scene. He's like, your name means wonder and Marvel. You're our little Marvel. And she just stops and looks at her dad. She's like, I have the same name as Captain Marvel as Carol Danvers. And she's like so excited. I'm sorry, I had to add that in.
Yeah, that's true. And there was a great thing when you're talking about like her mom coming around when she had a homemade costume. So she could be like Captain Marvel, and her mom like contributes to that, you know, like, oh, this is the costume I made for you. And that was a really nice moment too for her to get her superhero outfit.
And it's like culturally made. Like if you look at it, it looks like a, I think it's called a sari of what like a teenager would wear, where it's a little bit longer, a little
Indian culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a fun show. It's very cute. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're going to do more. That's fun. I could see her doing more for Okay. All right. Let's keep this rolling.
Yeah. We still have two more. I forgot there's also the holiday special.
Well, to be fair, I don't really have much to say about the holiday special, and Werewolf by Night's not going to take very long. I don't think either. So
there's
another. I didn't see Werewolf by Night on the list. So
yes.
I didn't know, like,
it's all the way at the end. Yes.
What the heck is Werewolf by Night? Oh, dear Lord. I am like really bad.
The last two are movies. So this is the last TV show. It's Moon Knight. All right, so Moon Knight. This series follows Stephen Grant, a mild-mannered gift shop employee. He works at a museum, who becomes plagued with blackouts and memories of another life. Stephen discovers he has dissociative identity disorder and shares a body with mercenary Mark Spector. As Stephen/Mark's enemies converge upon them, they must navigate their complex identities while thrust into a deadly mystery among the powerful gods of Egypt. Yeah, it's a lot in this show going back and forth.
It's very trippy.
a lot, and awesome. It's very trippy,
especially right at the beginning when I really knew nothing about Moon Knight, and I was just like, what is happening with this guy? He's like chained up in his room because he's like having these like traveling nightmares, and
He chains himself to his own beds because he's like, you know, hey, whatever he does in his sleep, he doesn't want to hurt people. Like, so I assumed he was like some kind of werewolf or something,
right? But no, whole other thing. This one is another TV-14, released March 30th, 2022. It's got a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb rating, 86% by critics on Rotten Tomato, and 89% audience score, which does not surprise me at all for this movie or show. Yeah. We've got Oscar Isaac. Awesome. Super amazing. Oh my gosh. He is Mark Spector, aka Moon Knight, aka Stephen Grant, aka Jake Lockley. He plays a lot of mostly two, but there's a third one that pops up. As we said, he has dissociative identity disorder, and his identities are all distinct characters, and they're differentiated by each of their different attitudes and accents, I guess, technically too. So that's how you know which one is which. May Calamwe is Layla. Sorry, Scarlet Scarab. She's an archaeologist and adventurer who is Spectre's wife and is aware that he is Moon Knight. And then you have Kareem El Hakim and F. Murray Abraham as Khonshu. So this is the Egyptian moon god, an outcast among the gods for waging a one god war on perceived injustices, which necessitates him to find and use his avatar, Mark Spectre. And Ethan Hawke is in this as Arthur Harrow.
Yes.
I didn't know he was in this, and he popped up and I was like, Ethan Hawke, what? He's a religious zealot and cult leader associated with the Egyptian goddess Amit, looking to exact justice and judgment based on future crimes. Yeah.
Okay. I just need to get some things straight before you guys start talking about this show.
Feel free to.
It's a lot.
This show. Yeah.
So Mark Spector.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a spirit of him that somehow got trapped in this guy's body, or literally he's two separate people? Like, he has the two separate people where he married Layla. So he's like, he married Layla at a certain point, and then he turns back to Steven and doesn't realize he's married.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah. Mark is like the main guy technically who had a whole life. He married Layla. Unbeknownst to her, he has this disassociated identity named Steven.
Yes.
So Steven is not the main, like, who he grew up being. He grew up probably being Mark,
right? Which we don't know that until maybe episode what, 2, 3, around we don't know about that remember. until a little bit into, okay, because we first think Steven's the main guy
because Steven's who we meet first,
right. okay that makes sense. All right, thank you. Now Khonshu.
Yes.
So moon god, outcast among the gods of, so I'm assuming his spirit goes to Mark and Mark becomes the Moon Knight and like a version of the god and uses his powers. Is that what we're saying here?
Basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he humans basically become like the avatars of the gods. So like they're endowed with their powers and they communicate directly with them and they do their bidding or whatever. So yeah, that's Mark/Steven is that for Khonshu.
Gotcha.
He's
okay.
Kind of like the Egyptian Punisher in this, you know, he's
that's a good way to describe him. Yeah.
Okay. I got it now. My brain's not confused.
Yeah. Okay. I hope it stays that way because this is
well, I just needed to understand the Steve Mark thing and Layla. Like,
no, to be fair.
And then you put Layla in there and I'm like, huh?
No, when you watch this, you're just like, okay. And then when like Jake pops up, you're just like, there's a third one.
Right.
What is happening?
I'm not even gonna worry about Jake.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, I get it. It's a lot. All right, let's do trivia real quick. So for the scenes where Steven and Mark interact with each other, rather than have Oscar Isaac try to act against a green screen, stand-in, or an extra, Marvel actually hired his brother, the journalist actor Michael Benjamin, Bro Dameron Hernandez, to serve as his double to help him act opposite himself. So I thought that was very cool that they hired his brother for him to help out, you know, with those scenes. And Isaac's British accent was criticized by the audience as soon as the first trailer was released. Isaac explained that he put on a London English accent for Stephen that he suggested was intentionally bizarre and unconvincing. So he's saying he did that on purpose, yeah, as far as the bad accent goes.
Which, that shows how American I am, because it sounded like an English accent to me.
I didn't know, so it was like a thing. Yeah, and then I started reading where people are like, oh my God, his accent's terrible. And I was like, was it? I guess I'm just like a dumb American too, yeah. Okay. Oh gosh. Moon Knight's producer Grant Curtis cited the psychological thriller Memento as an influence on the show, as well as action movies like Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, John Wick, and The Bourne Identity. I thought that was a fun tie-in since we just did Indiana Jones not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, John Wick and The Bourne Identity. Yeah, this show had to be trippy.
There was a lot happening in this. There's literally a lot going on. And Oscar Isaac told Variety in March 2022 he is not contractually obligated to remain in the MCU after Moon Knight ends its 6-episode run, so fans should not necessarily expect for him to show up in other features.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm like, oh, I don't think he's coming back. But he could. There's always that window.
Yeah. He could,
it's just funny how he like went back and like he was Star Wars and now he's Marvel. That's just so you don't normally see that crossover.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, he did a great job, but I feel like he needs to move on at this point in his career. Because if not, he's going to keep getting typecasted in like superhero type roles. And he's got so much more to him than that, which you see a lot of in the show.
Yeah. And I think this is fine as a one-off. It was a good ride.
It was. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't really need any more Moon Knight.
No, I agree. All right, take it away.
Okay. I went in 100% cold on this one.
Yeah.
The only thing I knew about it was that Ethan Hawke was in it, and he played the bad guy, which that was pretty much my reason for watching it in the first place, because I'm a huge fan. I've been a huge fan of Ethan Hawke for years, ever since, like, the Before Sunrise movie, if you're familiar with that. So, you know, seeing him play a character that's totally out of his, you know, young sort of heartthrob kind of look, and seeing him not just that, but a bad guy, and not just a bad guy, but a cult leader. I'm like, okay, that's my guy. I got to see what it's all about. And he did it. He played it so very well. I don't know if we referenced it specifically. Oh yeah, we touched on it briefly in the summary, but basically Harrow, the character, is the leader of this cult who's trying to connect with the goddess Ahmet, who is like it's like the opposite of Khonshu in that she basically wants to kill people before they do anything bad, but she like knows that they're going to. So it's like one version of fascism versus another version of fascism, basically.
Minority Report.
Yes, very yes, absolutely. Absolutely Minority Report.
What movie? I'm like, there's some real or
it's The Punisher versus Minority Report.
That's
a good
way
to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So seeing that I thoroughly enjoyed seeing Ethan Hawke as this guy. I mean, he's, you know, he's creepy, he's charismatic, he's charming, he's totally evil. I mean, he's everything a sadistic cult leader should be. I'm probably a little too fascinated by him. But he's both him and Oscar Isaac, and I'm gonna say a lot of this in a minute, in that he's one of those actors that, more than just becoming a character, like, he knows how to transform his very likeness into a character, like, just the way he references certain words, the way he pronounces things, the way, you know, certain vocal inflections, you know, facial expressions, like, it's so nuanced, and it's like hypnotic in a way. And then seeing that done by Oscar Isaac is one of the reasons why I hope he moves on from superhero movies, because he's got so much more talent than just playing a superhero, because he literally had to play two different people in the same scene. You know, he had to go from Mark, the, you know, hardcore mercenary, you know, kind of wisecracking, but pretty much, you know, totally sure of himself, to this shy, timid, you know, Clark Kent kind of character. And I mean, you'd swear they were two different people. You know, and he did it so well. Thoroughly enjoyed that. And I am a huge sucker for mythology in general, so anything representing like any pantheon, I'm going to be all for it. So the fact that they really explored the Egyptian pantheon, like all the different, like they didn't get too deep into like a lot of the stories, but seeing a lot of the characters show up, you know, Osiris show up and, you know, the different, you know, like at one point they go into the pyramids of Giza where like they have this council of the gods who are being embodied by human avatars. So you see like a human version of what Osiris would look like and, you know, these different other gods and goddesses and stuff. And I'm like, I'm geeking out at this point. This is so cool. But Anubis never showed up and I was so mad because he's my favorite.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. He only showed up as a statue. But
yeah, whatever. That's it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah. What else can I say? I feel like I'm glossing over a lot of it because it's so much more detailed than a lot of this. Like, I guess the biggest thing you need to know, anyone who hasn't seen it yet, is that it's really a war of the gods taking place in our world. Kind of like, not really like Thor, because they're more or less demigods, but these are like on a much bigger scale.
Sounds a little bit more accurate too, because Marvel tends to intermix the pantheons or make it very inaccurate.
Right.
But from what I'm hearing from this show, it's more accurate than what they've done in the past.
It does seem a lot more, accurate to the Egyptian mythology when it comes to their various gods and stuff. So, and then that combined with, should I just go into like telling why Mark and Steven are two different people?
Yeah.
Go for it. Because, I mean, this is like huge. I mean, it is like the spoiler. So. So I'd say for the first, it's only six episodes long, but for the maybe four or five episodes, we see that, you know, how they are a split personality, but we don't actually know why.
Right.
And they keep sort of, he keeps referencing something that happened in his childhood. And, you know, he references, actually, we don't even see a reference to his mother until episode five, where this random lady shows up in his memory, kind of, you know, screaming at him, you know, this is your fault. What is his fault? We don't know.
Exactly. We still don't know.
Yeah. And then this one episode, he goes up against Harrow, Ethan Hawke, and he gets shot and he dies, basically. And then we follow his spirit into what we perceive as either his introduction to the afterlife or his unconscious mind or a little bit of both. And there's basically two or three different levels of what he's actually experiencing. So after he dies, he sort of wakes up in this mental institution and all of the different characters that we've seen throughout the show are actually things that he's noticed in the mental institution. So we're like, okay, is he just a guy who's, you know, sick and stuck in this place and he's fantasizing about this whole thing? Or is this just his unconscious mind, you know, trying to cope with whatever trauma he dealt with? And we find out, here is where we find out that as a young boy, he sort of had this childhood hero, like a kind of like, it was like a 90s TV show, kind of like a Steve Irwin meets Indiana Jones, but like for kids, called, his name was called Stephen Grant, like Stephen Grant, you know, British explorer, like a, you know, very much like that. So we kind of idolized him. So we kind of get an idea of, okay, that's where his alternate personality came from, but we still don't know why. And then it gets into the actual story of his as a kid. So as it turns out, Mark had a younger brother as a kid. And you can kind of give an idea what's about to happen. You know, that's, they go out exploring one day and there's a big rainstorm and they get lost in this cave. And, you know, the younger brother, he slips off and he slips under this rock and Mark tries to save him. Does not save him, and his brother dies, basically. Not basically, his brother dies. And so, as if that wasn't bad enough, the mother pretty much has this spiral breakdown where she blames him completely to the point where she, like, beats him. So it's just, I mean, it just, it, that literally just fractures him completely. So we find out that as a way of coping with that, he essentially fragments his own mind and creates Steven. He creates his way of escaping, like, the abuse that he, you know, dealt with. And that's you know, Steven was like his way of getting himself through that. Mm-hmm. And it became so much of that, that it became so much that it literally became two separate people. It's heavy. It's dark. Mm-hmm. It's very dark. It's very heavy. It's good and it's very well done, but it's definitely, mm-hmm. It's intense.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so that's how we learn how that happens. And then, so we see that flashback, and then we see a version of him in this mental institution where he's having a conversation with a doctor, which is also played by Ethan Hawke. So it's like the bad guy who, you know, he thought was the bad guy, or we thought was the bad guy, or we're not sure, or maybe he's just this doctor trying to help him. And then in addition to that, him and Steven are on this boat cruising through the desert sand, which is like the journey. I don't know what it's called in Egyptian mythology, but it's basically like a life review. Mm-hmm. So like when you die, you have a life review of all your deeds on earth, as your heart is placed on the scale, as you know, Anubis is sort of judging them. And if the scale balances, then you get to go to paradise. If it doesn't, then you're thrown into the sand for all eternity, like hell, basically.
Right.
Surprised Anubis didn't show up if they did that.
I'm saying he literally just shows up as a statue and he's holding the, I was like,
that's it.
I ain't gonna do my boy dirty like that. So not you let me be in the show. I will be his avatar. Love that dude.
I can see that.
He's the Hades of the Egyptian pantheon. He's kind of like the black sheep. He's always in the background, just kind of doing his thing, just chilling. But he's also like, you don't mess with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so fierce, but he's good. I think he's good. Hope he's good. Anyway, but yeah. So he's on the boat, and this, you know, the hearts are trying to balance, and and then we meet this other goddess. Do you remember what her name was?
Oh,
I wrote it down somewhere. Actually, I wrote it down in here.
Did you?
Is it the hippo?
The hippo.
Oh,
to wear it.
What was it?
To wear it.
To wear it. That seems right. I know I wrote it down. I don't see
it. Yeah, to wear it.
Number seven.
Yeah, to wear it. Okay, yeah. So I loved her, by the way. She was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she's the one who's taking them, you know, to see if they make it into the afterlife, blah, blah, blah. And the scales don't actually balance in time. So, like, the dead souls of the sand start trying to pull them into the underworld. And Steven, being the thing who helped him cope with everything else, is the thing that he's the guy that fights him off. And he basically saves Mark's soul by literally jumping into the sand and kind of, not intentionally, but he ends up like sacrificing himself. So Mark can get to the afterlife, to paradise or whatever. Which he gets to paradise and he's like, no, I'm not good with, I'm not gonna do this without my brother, my other self, you know? Mm-hmm. So he goes back for Steven and they end up coming back to life, and it's a very powerful moment for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very, very trippy.
It is.
I'm getting a headache from just listening to you.
It makes sense though. Like when you watch it, it totally makes sense. It does. But it's kind of hard to explain.
It sounds like it probably makes sense, but I'm getting a headache listening to you. I'm afraid to try to watch it. I feel like I'll come out even more with a headache.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, but that's really ultimately what the show is about, is really just a war of the gods and the war of the mind. That's the way I kind of see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the end, we actually see a big battle between Khonshu and Ahmed as like giants. And that's even trippier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the stuff of dreamscapes and nightmares and stuff. Like, I've fantasized about stuff like that. It's really pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
So
interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, all in all, I was absolutely just blown away by this show and how Mark and Steven sort of complement each other. You know, Steven's very much a analytical nerd. He loves the history, knows how to read hieroglyphics, whereas Mark knows the tactical stuff. He's a warrior. So they sort of balance each other out in that way. They're a great team. And then, and then, of course, we come out to find out in the end that there's actually a third personality, which we don't really see much of. But
no.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
But
this show sounds very much like a Dan show.
Oh,
like how Ms. Marvel was an Ashley show. This is very much like a Dan show.
It is very much a me show. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know if there's anything else I can really say about it. I mean, I can go, there's probably some more stuff I skipped over, but that's pretty much the main, like, things of it. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. And it is very cool. It is a lot darker. That whole mind thing right at the end when he was at the mental institution, I was like, wait a second.
Like, you really don't know what's real.
And it's so cool because you're just trying to piece it together and figure out, like, is, like you were saying, is this in his mind? Is this actually what's happening? So Ethan Hawke's character is not the bad guy. He's trying to help him. And it just really makes you think. And like you said, just that battle between the two personalities. And it's just a good look at just mental, like, issues. And I don't know. It's just. It's very, very cool. I don't know, again, Ashley, if you would totally enjoy it other than the mythology part, but yeah, I just, in my mind, I don't know if it's really your type of show for sure, because it is so dark, but it is very, very fun. And once you kind of, I don't know, I feel like once you get to the end, then all of the rest of it even makes more sense when you find out what happened to him and why there are two split personalities and all of that.
Yeah, like when you understand the history of it, everything really comes together perfectly.
Exactly, and they wait until that very end.
There's a couple like early 2000 movies, mid 2000 movies that I'm like, it's like a combination and I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, but I think it was a good one off too. So if they don't do more, it's okay. It was just a great, great series that Absolutely. They released. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Anything else? I don't have anything else to say. You like covered all of it.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I mean, in the end, it was satisfying enough to where if they, you know, I feel like almost doing more would be overkill. Like,
probably,
just, you know,
honestly,
I mean,
yeah.
We know there's a third guy. We know Khonshu's still doing his thing. We know he's off, you know, doing whatever he wants to do.
Exactly.
That's all we need.
Yeah. I think it was a great way to end it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And time-wise, we need to keep moving because
we're almost done. We're almost done, I promise. I knew this would be a little bit longer, so we're almost done. So Guardians of the Galaxy had a holiday special. So quick summary, Star-Lord, Drax, Rocket, Mantis, and Groot engage in some spirited shenanigans, an all-new original holiday special that was just on Disney+. It's TV-14, came out November 25th, 2022. This one had a 6.9 out of 10 on IMDb. 93% of critics enjoyed it, 79% of the audience. It's cute. I don't know. If you skip it, I think it's fine. I don't think it really adds anything to the storyline of Guardians of the Galaxy, but they do have a fun bit where Mantis and Drax kidnap Kevin Bacon because Star-Lord talked about how much he loved Kevin Bacon when he was on Earth. They kidnap him and bring him to the party, and it's a whole thing where they're trying
to cheer him up, you know, give him a good Christmas.
Exactly. They put him in a, like, literally put him in a box, and Kevin Bacon is obviously freaking out, rightfully so. And then, you know, they mess with his mind to make it so he's enjoying himself. But of course, Star-Lord is like, guys, you have to take him back. Like, we can't kidnap Kevin Bacon, okay? So it's just a cute little movie, you know, if you're looking for a holiday.
Holiday heartwarming thing.
Exactly, yeah. So that's why I just threw it in here. Like I said, it's just cute. So if you're looking for some holiday fun, it was a fun ride. Easy to watch. Okay, so Werewolf by Night. This is also a movie that came out around Halloween. So this one is, summary is, on a dark and somber night, a secret cabal of monster hunters emerge from the shadows and gather at the foreboding Bloodstone Temple following the death of their leader. In a strange and macabre memorial to the leader's life, the attendees are thrust into a mysterious and deadly competition for a powerful relic, a hunt that will ultimately bring them face to face with a dangerous monster. So this is just a movie. I don't expect there to really be any more dealing with any of this stuff. You never know with Marvel, but this is just like a one-off movie. It's a TV-14, came out October 7th, 2022. 7.2 out of 10 IMDb, 90% from critics, and 89% audience score. So this one, it's like, I don't even think it's not even that long. I should have put how long it was in here, but it's not that long of a movie to watch. It's very easy to watch. It's mostly in black and white, so it's more like a horror themed project, which is why I think a lot of people liked it, because again, it's a little bit different as far as the Marvel things go, a little bit of a different storyline.
Less than an hour. It's only 52 minutes.
I almost said 45, but I was like, I can remember for sure. Yeah, it's very quick to get through. Very easy to watch. It goes by fast and it doesn't drag, in my opinion. So we have Gael Garcia Bernal as Jack Russell, aka the Werewolf by Night. He's a monster hunter who has been afflicted with a curse that turns him into a werewolf. But the other monster hunters don't know this right away. That's revealed towards the end of the movie. Laura Donnelly is Elsa Bloodstone. She is Ulysses Bloodstone's estranged daughter. So Ulysses is the leader who died. And that's the reason why they all gathered. So she's his estranged daughter who dislikes her family's tradition of hunting monsters. And then we have Harriet Sansom Harris as Verusa Bloodstone, who's Ulysses' widow and Elsa's stepmother, who leads the secret group of monster hunters. There's a lot more people in it, but those were kind of the main actors that were in it. So like I said, this was in black and white, and among many of the creative reasons behind the use of the black and white filter in this film, the main purpose was to obscure the blood and gore so they could avoid a TV MA rating, which worked because they got a TV 14 rating.
Cool.
I don't understand what the main difference is. I mean, it's red or it's like gray, but whatever. I don't make the ratings, so. And around 16 and 31 minutes, there's a cigarette burn effect that appears in the top right corner of the screen, which used to appear in old films. So that indicates the change between reels on the film projectors. So they're very much trying to give this like an old monster movie feel when you watch it, besides the black and white. Like it just has that feel. And apparently this has been in development since 2001.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long time.
It's probably one of those around. Like they wanted to do for a long time and then they get sidetracked and they go back
exactly.
to it again.
Exactly. Couldn't figure out the story, all that jazz. And there is one bit right at the end where they change from black and white to color. And as they do that, Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz plays, which is fitting because, you know, same thing, black and white to color movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's
a bit weird in a horror film, but it was a cool effect.
Why not? It's Marvel. They can do what they want.
Exactly. So essentially the Werewolf by Night, he knows the monster that they're hunting. His monster's name is Ted. He's like this big, I don't even know how to describe him. He's just this big monster that can turn people into fire. Like he grabs you and then he burns you to death. So he's friends with them. So he's trying to help the monster escape. And then the monster has like this bloodstone on it, which if the Werewolf by Night comes in touch with the bloodstone, it turns him into the werewolf, which Verusa figures out and Elsa figures out. But Elsa basically befriends the Werewolf by Night. Verusa does this whole thing where she tries to get the werewolf to kill her stepdaughter because she's like, he's a monster, he's evil, I'm going to show you. And instead everybody else dies, and Elsa, the monster Ted, and the Werewolf by Night all are the only ones who manage to escape. It's essentially what happens at the end of the movie. But
well, there you go.
Yeah, it's just a fun, like, Halloween-esque, like, Marvel movie. So I wanted to throw that in here. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And like I said, it's not even an hour long, so it's very easy to watch.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a good ride if you like horror, more horror-type movies. But even in black and white, I guess it's not as scary. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Weird. I feel like it'd be more scary in black and white.
I mean, I don't understand the rating. Because it gives that more sense of like ominous, you know, feeling, because it's harder to tell what's going on and all of that. And I like that they put it in black and white too. I think it was very cool.
Yeah.
I looked it up on IMDb and the trailer is kind of going right now in front of me. And this looks scary to me.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't think it was really scary, but it is definitely like a horror movie.
We are talking about me, but it looks creepy. And the main guy who plays Jack Russell, I was like, I know your face. Why do I know your face? He was in Letters to Juliet and A Little Bit of Heaven. Do you remember those, Sammy? They're romantic comedies.
Yeah.
Letter to Juliet was with he was the Italian chef that she dumped in eventually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then A Little Bit of Heaven's with darn it. I can't think of her name. She was in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh,
Kate Hudson.
I was like, that sounds like a Kate something movie.
Yeah,
Kate.
Sounds kind of familiar. I remember a Kate.
Yeah, I know I've seen those movies, but it's definitely been a long time. I knew I recognized him too. I was like, oh, I know you. You've been asked stuff.
It's well, that was one of them was 2009 or 10, and the other one was like 2011.
Yeah, it's a while.
And now. Then Laura Donnelly, who plays
Elsa.
Elsa looks very familiar as well. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I've seen her in.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else she's been in. And Harriet Sansom Harris has been in a lot of stuff too, the actress. Mm. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Oh, she was in Merlin. That's why I know her.
Oh, I did not watch that.
Well, it's a British TV show from back in the day.
Yeah. But anyway, that's all I got on this one. It's just fun. It's. Nice. Maybe not for Ashley, but I like it because I like horror stuff. So I thought it was another fun thing that Marvel was trying out, you know, even if it's just a one-off.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to check it out. It definitely sounds like fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So backing up to the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, friends. Special. Yes.
It was it their attempt to do like to kind of mirror Star Wars holiday special?
I mean, I don't know what the exact purpose was.
I think it was just, let's see what the Guardians can do and make it a fun holiday, heartwarming kind of thing.
Yeah, I think they kind of had like the storyline in mind. I think I read that somewhere and they just decided to do it. Because they filmed it while they were filming the movie.
There's been no holiday special like this since Star Wars holiday special. So that's why I'm like.
Well, I mean, every now and then you get like a sitcom or something that does like a holiday sort of special thing. So I think it was more of that.
Yeah.
That's like in a line of like TV shows. You don't normally see a movie do a holiday special.
True.
Yeah. But if you're going to do a holiday special, you can probably get away with it for Marvel with these sort of characters.
Yeah. I would say if any Marvel team would do a holiday special, it would be the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Well, yeah, no one else could do it and make it plucky and fun. Right?
No, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I feel like if you don't see it, it's not going to change anything about the movie when it comes out. Mm. It doesn't really add anything related to that.
Right.
But it's fun. Yeah, and the holiday decorations they put up was fun. They put lots of lights up. They really tried. They really tried to make a nice Christmas for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so it was a little heartwarming there, you know.
Yeah. Aww. Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else?
No.
All right.
That's it. I think we did enough.
We've done it.
Pixie Dusters, thank you for joining us for 2 days, very long, intense, amazing episode of Marvel TV show / a couple movies. Mm-hmm. Go check out whatever you thought sounded great. We'd love to hear your opinions. Mm-hmm. Go to our social medias, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, etc. To leave your opinions for us to read. Yeah. Next week, we will see you for Wakanda Forever.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Have a great week, guys. Bye, Pixie Dusters.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Pixie Dust Twins, Sammy and Ashley. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to the Limitless Podcast Network's own channel, Instagram, and all things social media. And we'll see you all real soon.